This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You are listening to The Morning Run. It's 7:06 on Wednesday, the 26th of January. I'm Shazana Mokhtar together with Wong Xiaoning. But first, as we always do, let's take a look at how global markets ended trading yesterday.
Well, it was just a sea of red.
It's a bloodbath. A
complete bloodbath. The Dow was down 0.2%, S&P 500 down 1.2%, and the Nasdaq down a whopping 2.3%. And, you know, after hours, Microsoft released their results, which weren't bad, but even then, the Microsoft after hours prices just collapsed. Now, in Asia itself, Nikkei and the Hang Seng were down 1.7%. Shanghai was down 2.6%. Straits Times Index down 1.1%. And we kind of fared a little bit better because the FBM KLCI was only down 0.9%.
All right. So for more on what's moving markets and to understand the directions of the markets at the moment, we speak to Simon Lim, Chief Investment Strategist at CGSC IMB Securities. Simon, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us today. Now, if we start with the FBM KLCI, the index is down nearly 4% year to date. That's not quite an auspicious start to the year. Where is the selling coming from? And what could be the main reasons for that sell-off?
The selling on the KLCI is not unique. I think that's the first thing we have to establish. Yeah? We have seen selling, as you quite rightly pointed out before I came on, but we've seen selling right around the world. You're seeing a sea of red from Wall Street. Now, as you said, the KLCI down maybe 4% for the year, but the S&P 500 was down more than double that. I think it's closer to 8 now. The Euro Stoxx 50 is closer to 6. The Nikkei 225 is down close to 5%. So you are seeing massive losses around the world, much greater losses than the KLCI. So to be fair, the KLCI has actually been one of the more defensive markets here today, right? So now the fund flows data tells us that local institutional investors have been leading the selling. There have been the biggest net sellers year to date. Now, the greatest amount of buying has been coming from local nominee and retail investors. Foreign investor buying interest year to date has been weak. But that's to be expected, yes, given the weak market sentiment globally. And if you are running a fund out of New York and you're seeing losses in developed markets, what do? You sell across your portfolio, and that includes the KLCI. Now, so the main driver for this selling is the fear of rising rates and government bond yields, particularly in the United States. And that goes back to rising inflation in most economies around the world. That's critical, of course, because interest rates and government bond yields determine the discount rate for valuation. The higher the rate, the lower the valuation. Hence, the selling to re-rate valuations downwards. Back to you, Shazana.
Okay, Simon, probably one reason why the FBM KLCI hasn't come down so much is actually last year we were one of the worst performing Asian markets, probably less outflow there. But I'm just curious, since there is a broad sell-off at this current juncture, where can we park our money?
Well, there are a number of things. First of all, you can look at within the region or you can look globally. Let's start globally. At the global level, we at CGSC IMB, I have pivoted away from the US markets towards more defensive markets. And my favorites are Europe, Japan, and China. So Europe and Japan have better prospects for this year. And the key to that are their lower inflation rates and their more dovish central banks, which means they have better chances of keeping rates at zero for longer. Now, note that we have pivoted as well from growth stocks, so-called growth stocks, which are essentially tech stocks. Yeah, we have pivoted away from tech stocks towards value stocks. And Europe and Japan have better representation of value stocks in their indices. And on both PE, price to earnings, and PEG, price to earnings to growth indicators, Europe and Japan are better value. and look more defensible than the US. We also like Chinese stocks. Now, China has had a bad, terrible, very, very bad year in 2021. But we may be past the worst for Chinese stocks. The CSI 300 index has been base building in that 4,800 region. And from a value perspective, Chinese stocks have been oversold. Technically, they are very badly oversold. The CSI 300's PE and price-to-book ratios, well, they are now trading at the low end of their historical ranges. And if you look at the trailing 12 months PE ratio divided by the S&P 500's trailing 12 months PE ratio, if you like relative valuation, that's now at a cyclical low. Within ASEAN, we like the Singapore markets. Would you like me to elaborate on that?
Yes, please. You know, because it's still a relative outperformer. It's still up 4% on a year-to-date basis. Can it hang on?
You're absolutely right. So that's absolutely correct. So, but to reiterate, I wouldn't be overly negative on the Malaysian markets. Its underperformance against most of the ASEAN 5 markets has been marginal. We're talking about 100 bips, right? You know, 1% or so year-to-date, with the exception of Singapore, the Straits Times Index, which has had a great start to the year and has outperformed most of the major markets year to date. So Singapore is our favorite ASEAN 5 market at the moment. And key to this is that it has the most attractive yield gap in favor of stocks amongst the ASEAN 5 markets. So to clarify, the yield gap refers to the next 12 months earnings yield minus the 10-year government bond yield. So for Singapore, that yield gap is around 5.3%. So the earnings yield for Singapore stocks is 5.3% higher than the 10-year government bond yields. So for the other ASEAN markets, that gap ranges from around zero for Indonesia to 3.6% for Thailand. Malaysia is not that bad either, really. You know, that yield gap is about 3% currently. But the problem for Malaysia now is next 12 months' earnings are negative. 9 to 10% negative, depending on whose calculations you use. But that's the consensus. So within ASEAN, my favorite is Singapore. And I like, within Singapore, Singapore banks, which have been leading and driving the outperformance of the STI in Straits Times Index year to date.
So the sudden move by the Monetary Authority of Singapore by tightening rates ahead of schedule, that doesn't change your thesis?
Yeah, well, no, not at all. Now, what the Monetary Authority did was not to hike rates. Singapore does not manage its policy by interest rates.
It
essentially uses its currency as a policy tool. So what the Monetary Authority of Singapore did yesterday was to adjust upwards the slope of the Singapore dollar nominal effective exchange rate policy band. Now, it's quite a mouthful, but that's what it's called. The Singapore dollar nominal effective exchange rate policy band. That's what it's called. So what they've effectively done is to allow the Singapore dollar a little more room to appreciate, right? So In terms of the equities market, that might make it even more attractive because you have a stronger currency as well. Well, you should have a stronger currency, but not necessarily immediately. So that policy band sets the parameters around which the Sing dollar is allowed to trade without any central bank intervention. Right? So in adjusting upwards the slope of that band, the MAS is signaling tolerance of a slightly stronger Sing dollar. Now, the market could not be said to have reacted to this announcement because there were so many other things going on in the world yesterday, today. So the Sing dollar strengthened very slightly against the US dollar and the Malaysian ringgit, but it was really quite minor, no big deal. And that was because that adjustment was slight. But what was significant about this, though, was that the decision was made in between scheduled policy meetings, which are held in April and October. So that kind of sends a signal that the MAS has some sense of urgency about this, about controlling inflation.
Okay.
So I would expect more adjustment in coming months. So that's important. How that impacts on exchange rates going forward will depend on what the central bank of the opposite currency does. So for example, just bear with me here. What the central bank at the other side does. If Bank Negara raises rates, then nothing changes.
All right, Simon, thanks so much for speaking to us this morning. That was Simon Lim, Chief Investment Strategist at CGS CIMB Securities, giving us his take on some of the themes and trends that we'll see moving markets, particularly in Asia. Ending our conversation there with the look at what's happening in Singapore. He still says that Singapore would be his favorite market at the moment in light of its upsides.
Yeah, and also there's definitely a pivot from growth to value stocks. And the markets that he prefers in the region include Europe, Japan and China.
He gave a really interesting explanation as well about how the Monetary Authority of Singapore's policy direction could impact markets, which, I mean, they didn't react too much.
No.
But the point is, I thought it was interesting he mentioned that they took action before their scheduled meetings just to give a sense of that urgency that central banks around the world are facing with rising inflations in the US.
Yeah, I think even Australia yesterday, inflation came in at 3.5%, much higher than expected. So I think a lot of central bankers are looking at that number very closely in terms of inflation and reacting, whether it's using currency, which is a Singapore case, or using interest rates.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.